for live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Last night, people protesting in Minneapolis escalated as demonstrators were lashed by tear gas and rubber bullets.
The main message here
is that they want to see those officers involved.
They want to see those officers arrested.
Trade my 4x4 for a GC3, ain't no more feel of speed. I gave him chance and chance and chance again, I even told him please. I found it crazy the police to shoot you and know that you dead, but still tell you to freeze. Fucked up, I seen what I seen. I guess that mean hold him down if he say he can't breathe. It's too many mothers just grieving, they killing us for no reason. Been going on for too long to get it even. Throw us some candy like dogs and hyenas. I went to court and they sent me to prison. My mama was crushed when they said I can't leave. First I was dropped and I sobered up quick when I heard all that time that they gave to Talib. He got a life sentence plus. We just some products of our environment. How the fuck they gon' blame us? You can't fight fire with fire, I know, but at least we can turn off the flames on. Every color person ain't dumb, and all whites not racist. I be judging by the mind and heart, I ain't really in the space. Fuck up the way that we living is not getting better, you gotta know how to survive. Crazy, I had to tell all of my loved ones to carry a gun when they going outside. Stay in the mirror whenever you drive. Overprotect and go crazy for mine. You gotta pay attention to the sign. Seem like the blind following the blind. Thinking about everything that's going on. I boost security up in my home. I'm with my kind of, they right or they wrong. I call him now, he'll pick up the phone. And it's 5 in the morning, he waking up on it. Tell him wherever I'm at, then they coming. I see blue lights, I get scared and start running. That shit be crazy, they push to protect us. Swords and handcuffs and arrest us. Why they go home at night, that shit messed up. Knowing we needed help, they neglect us. None of them who gon' make them respect us. I can see in your eye that you fed up. Fuck around, got my shot, I won't let up. They know that we a problem together. They know that we can storm anywhere. That's bigger than black and white. It's a problem with the whole way of life. It can't change overnight. But we gotta start somewhere, might as well go ahead and start here. We done had a hell of a year, I'ma make it count why I'm here. God is the only man I fear. Fuck it, I'm going on the front line. He gon' bust your ass if you come past that gun line. You know when the storm go away, then the sunshine. Got put your head in the game when it's crash time. I want all my sons to grow up to be monsters. I want all my daughters to show out in public. Seem like we losing our country, but we gotta stand up for something. So this what it comes to. Every video I see on my conscience, I got power now, I gotta say something. Corrupt the police been the problem where I'm from. But I'd be lying if I said it was all of them. I ain't do this for the trend, I don't follow them. Altercation with the law, had a lot of them. People speaking for the people, I'm proud of them. Stick together, we can get it up out of them. I can't lie like I don't rap about killing and dope, but I'm telling my youngest to vote. I did what I did cause I didn't have no choice and no hope. I was forced to just jump in and go. This bullshit is all that we know, but it's time for a change. Got time to be serious, no time for no gang. Ain't taking no more, let us go from them chains. God bless they soul, every one of them names. It's bigger than black and white. It's a problem with the whole way of life. It can't change overnight. But we gotta start somewhere. Might as well go ahead and start here. We done had a hell of a year. I'ma make it count why I'm here. God is the only man I fear. They training officers the killers, then shooting protesters with these rubber bullets. They regular people, I know that they feel us. These scars too deep, they heal us. What happened to COVID? Nobody remember it, ain't making sense. I'm just here to vent. It happened to one of your people, it's different. We get it, the system is wicked, just learn how to pick it. Knowledge is power, I swear I'm a witness. I know that I'm gifted, I won't go too deep. Cause I'm scared they'll get me, ain't scared to admit it. Some shit I can't mention, it's people who can. Well, here's the chance, I won't take the stand. But I'll take a stand for what I believe. Must not be breathing the air that I breathe. You know that the way that I bleed, you can breathe. I never been a fan of police, but my neighborhood, I try to keep peace, so it's only right that I get in this streets. March for a reason, I just don't keep peace. Our people die for us to be free. Fuck do you mean? This was a dream. Now we got the power that we need to have. They don't want us with it, and that's why they mad. It's bigger than black and white. It's a problem with the whole way of life. It can't change overnight. But we gotta start somewhere. Might as well go ahead and start here. We done had a hell of a year. I'ma make it count why I'm here. God is the only man I fear. It's bigger than black and white. It's a problem with the whole way of life. It can't change overnight. But we gotta start somewhere. Might as well go ahead and start here. We done had a hell of a year. I'ma make it count why I'm here. God is the only man I fear.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Good evening, and thanks for joining the ladies of After 7 with the Black Reality Think Tank.
The material on this program may strike some viewers as vulgar, offensive, lecherous, and/or serious. It is not suitable for anyone under the age of 17. The views and opinions expressed by the After 7 panel are those of the individual panelists and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the Black Reality Think Tank. Any content provided by our panel or our guests are theirs alone and are not intended to slander any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything. And as always, callers, remember you can call in at 215-490-9832. And with that being said, I'm going to kick it to my girl, Maya Marie.
Thank you so much, Lady V. Good evening, ladies and gents. It's your girl, Maya Marie, and I want to welcome you to yet another episode of the After 7 Radio Show. My fellow co-hosts and I wanted to do something a little different for the Ancestral Profile tonight. If you've been listening to us the last couple of months, you may have noticed that we usually pick an African-American person who is no longer with us and highlight and honor them on each show to pay tribute. We usually pick these people based on the topic of the show for the evening. So since tonight's show is about the unrest that is happening all over the country right now, we thought it would be fitting to highlight and honor those who have lost their lives at the hands of police or white civilians because of racial injustice. So tonight, instead of doing a profile on each of these individuals, I will say their name, where they're from, and the year that they were killed to honor them and let them know that they are not forgotten and that their departure from us physically has sparked a movement for change. These names are being mentioned in no particular order, and of course, I could not list every single person we've lost for the sake of time and wanting to get into our discussion, but we wanted to highlight some of these individuals. Amadou Diallo, Bronx, New York, 1999. LaTanya Haggerty, Chicago, Illinois, 1999. Orlando Barlow, Las Vegas, Nevada, 2003. Derek Williams, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 2011. Trayvon Martin, Sanford, Florida, 2012. Sharice Francis, Queens, New York, 2012. Kendra James, Portland, Oregon, 2003. Rakia Boyd, Chicago, Illinois, 2012. Renisha McBride, Detroit, Michigan, 2013. Christian Taylor, Arlington, Texas, 2015. Dontre Hamilton, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 2014. Jordan Davis, Brevard County, Florida, 2014. Corey Jones, Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, 2015. John Crawford, Beaver Creek, Ohio, 2014. Terrence Crutcher, Tulsa, Oklahoma, 2016. Eric Garner, Staten Island, New York, 2014. Sean Bell, Queens, New York, Ferguson, Bronx, New York, 2000. Aura Rother, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 2014. Catherine Johnston, Atlanta, Georgia, 2006. Jordan Edwards, Balch Springs, Texas, 2017. Charlena Lyles, Seattle, Washington. Farrell, Charlotte, North Carolina, 15. Keith Scott, Charlotte, North Carolina, 2016. Antoine Rowe, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 2018. Walter Scott, North Charleston, South Carolina, 2015. Ayanna Stanley Jones, Detroit, Michigan, 2010. Stefan Clark, Sacramento, California, 2018. Keith Childress Jr., Las Vegas, Nevada, 2015. Tamir Rice, Cleveland, Ohio, 2014. Freddie Gray, Baltimore, Maryland, 2015. Michelle Cousseau, Phoenix, Arizona, 2015. Laquan McDonald, Chicago, Illinois, 2014. Atashiana Jefferson, Fort Worth, Texas, 2019. Sandra Bland, Waller County, Texas, 2015. Betty Jones, Chicago, Illinois, 2015. Alton Sterling, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 2016. Seville Smith, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 2016. Botham Jean, Dallas, Texas, 2018. Terrence Sterling, Washington, D.C., 2016. Philando Castillo, St. Paul, Minnesota, 2016. Michael Brown, Ferguson, Missouri, 2014. Ahmad Arbery, Glenn County, Georgia, 2020. Brianna Taylor, Louisville, Kentucky, 2020. Drajan Sean Reed, Indianapolis, Indiana, 2020. And George Floyd, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 2020. This may seem like a lot, but it is just a few of the unarmed African Americans killed at the hands of police or white civilians. Trust me, there are many, many more that we were not able to name tonight, but we want to salute them and their families and let them know that this movement that is taking place in our country right now is for them, because our lives do matter. And with that, we're going to go ahead and get the show cracking, because this topic is crucial, and we want to talk through some solutions regarding the state of our country tonight. So let's talk about this unrest, y'all. Take it away, Shani B.
Oh, my God. Maya, thank you so much for putting that together, and I appreciate it. I mean, you captured a lot of people, and like you said, you didn't even capture everyone. You didn't get everyone, but the names and remembering the stories of those people. Thank you, Maya. I appreciate that.
Of course.
I want to welcome everyone who's listening in and joining us in this conversation. This is something that is definitely near and dear to all of our hearts. And I'm personally out there on the front line, and I march, and I just felt the need to have this conversation. Last week we talked about sisterhood, and we really, you know, thought about pushing sisterhood back, but we wanted to do something positive before we talked about something like this, because this is near and dear to all of our hearts and something that everybody is struggling with. And we want to open this up to conversation. We have DeRay McKenzie, who's going to be joining us later. This brother is pretty dope. He's an activist, a civil rights leader. He's a podcaster, former school administrator. This brother does so much. He even ran for mayor. So we're going to start talking about how he started becoming a part of the movement, and then also, you know, get some feedback from our audience members to see how they're feeling, and, you know, doing some type of check-ins. But before we get started on the topic, I do have to ask my ladies who sit on this panel and that I share the panel with, do you guys want to talk about anything or just mention some of the unjust? And, you know, how do you guys feel about this topic and even, you know, embarking on something that is just so, I mean, our country is in unrest. I mean, the cities that Maya just named off, you know, our city, our state has been named multiple times. I'm going to kick it over to V. Like, Lady V, what do you feel about everything that's going on in our country? Because it's not just isolated to us.
I would have to say, for me, it's unbothering. Or not unbothering, it's bothering, sorry. It's very bothersome, only for the fact of with having two sons, a counterpart, it's sad because it's just like you feel for their life on a daily basis. Don't get pulled over. You know, even for me as a Black woman, I fear getting pulled over by the police. I think I told one of you guys that if I ever get pulled over, I'm driving the cops to the local Walmart by my house because I want everybody to pull out their cameras. I want everybody to get this and film it, live it, everything, just because driving while Black is just a problem. Walking while Black is a problem. Talking while Black is anything Black. Just being Black is a problem.
Jogging.
Like anything that we do, say, move, whatever, is a threat. And it's sad because we have to watch every little thing. I remember with my other half being in the military, it used to always be check your six, watch your six. Like, dude, you got my six. So we're not always together to know, like, how to watch each other's back. So it's like, I always got to watch my back, watch my kids' back, and watch how we move and groove and do any and everything. And I never thought a time would come where we were vaulting backwards. So, to this, you know, people hanging us and saying, oh no, we didn't want to, or shooting someone jogging and saying, oh well, he didn't look like he was from around here. Well, how am I supposed to look to be from around here? Because last I checked, we all live from around here.
Oh, I saw a Facebook Live where a man was being pulled over by an officer because he was driving too slow and he was looking at houses in the community because the man wasn't familiar or the officer wasn't familiar with the man. He pulled them over, ran his tags. He said, oh, I feel like you're out here trying to rob somebody. I mean, it's horrible that we live in a society that promotes that and thinks that it's okay. And in some instance, we as Black people even support the justice system to condemn our children or to put them away, lock them away and throw away the key. I mean, we support it in some type of way. And I don't want, and I'll give you guys examples later on in a conversation, but I want to get over to Maya before our guest comes in. Maya, what do you feel? Give me some of your ideas. Give me some of your thoughts.
It's a serious topic. I'm glad that we're having this conversation tonight because it is something that's going on right now. And like you said, it's not isolated to where we are. It is all over the country. And it's sad that we have to be afraid for our lives when we go out every day. You know, it shouldn't be like that. You know, they say we live in America and this is the land of the free, but it's not really that free. You know, in preparing the ancestral profile for tonight and doing research and looking up and researching these people who have lost their lives, all of them, they were unarmed. They weren't doing anything. One person was standing in his grandmother's backyard holding a cell phone. So my thing is, you know, you could just be outside minding your own business and somebody thinks that you're to them. They fear you. You know, we're feared. And you just open fire on you, and that's okay. And a lot of these officers and a lot of these white civilians have killed our African American sisters and brothers. They may have been fired from their job, but that's it. You know, a lot of them weren't jailed or weren't prosecuted. They just lost their jobs, and I think it's an injustice. You know, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, they all died for this. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, to see that it go back to we're seeing modern day lynchings right now.
Absolutely, you said it. Absolutely. And you know, one thing that touched my heart, and I know V, this is probably going to resonate well with you as well, is our babies, Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin, and then Laquan McDonald. I mean, these are babies. That Laquan McDonald, that touched home because Chicago, Illinois is my home. You know, that's where I was brought up. And to see this young boy walk away from the police, didn't have, wasn't posing a threat. He's walking away like Jacob Blake, walking away from the police. Get shot. This young man, Laquan McDonald, got shot 17 times. The young man was 17 years old. Jacob Blake, 7 times. It's like, I can't believe that we're living in a society. And then, you know, the one thing that gets me the most is when they want to put their whole entire, you know what I'm saying, like criminal record online. Like they want to demify these people or whatever before they're even actually, you know what I'm saying, I mean, victims. They're demifying the victims who have been victims to police injustice. You know,
their background may not even have had anything to do with the situation at hand.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree. So I am just, I'm again, so disgusted.
Yeah,
so
I wanted to say, like when you were saying, like even with the driving thing, like Orlando Castile was stopped over 52 times between the years of 2002 and 2016. Like,
wow.
ABC did a whole analysis on the racial disparities in several cities when it came to traffic stops. And when I saw that he had gotten pulled over 52 times with 86 minor traffic violations, mm-hmm. resulting in, it was like $6,500, that was sickening to me. Because in my mind, you guys had something out for this man.
Yeah.
And like now in the city, like, I'm sorry, like driving while black is a problem. So there, I have a little bit of statistics to just throw out there just so people could think about it. So driving while black in Minneapolis alone, blacks are 5 times more likely to be stopped than whites. Mm-hmm. In Chicago and San Francisco, blacks are 4 times more likely to be pulled over than whites. Philadelphia and Los Angeles, 3 times more likely for blacks to get pulled over than whites. And then even as a pedestrian, because we talked about this, walking as a pedestrian, in Chicago, blacks are 9 times more likely to get asked questioned just walking. Like, to me, if I'm walking and I'm black, like, why am I a threat to you? I'm just walking. Like, why you can't just leave me alone? New York, 8 times for black folks. San Francisco, 7 times. Like, so for me,
wow.
It's just like, there's nothing that we can do for the police to feel like we're safe. There's nothing, we can look at them wrong and they're going to pull out a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can blink and they're going to pull out a gun. Like, it's just like, you just should not be in that position if you just fear me because of the color of my skin.
And I have
at that
to
point,
say
I feel like you just need not be there.
I have to say this, then we not safe, ladies. Black women aren't safe. I personally get pulled over 2 times a year for nothing. What about you guys?
Girl, yeah, all of them.
I'll be honest, I don't get pulled over that much at all. Like, since being back in Wisconsin, I have not gotten pulled over. When I lived in Indiana, I got pulled over, I think the first year I lived there, I got pulled over maybe 4 or 5 times.
Wow.
I lived in a predominantly white neighborhood, so I got pulled over all the time. And then when I moved to Texas, I think I only got pulled over like once or twice. My other half, I'm not too sure, because he was military, so he probably got pulled over all the time. I don't know. Like, I didn't go anywhere for the most part. But moving back home, I don't get pulled over that much.
Well, I got pulled over, the most recent time was, I want to say, driving in Waukesha. And because I have a nice car, this officer looked in the car and looked at me, made a U-turn, and came and followed me for a couple of blocks and then turned his lights on. And I wasn't going. It was like 2 in the morning or something like that. I just finished getting my hair braided, and y'all ladies know how it is to get your hair braided. You know, spend 6-7 hours in a chair. You ain't going. And
no.
I basically told him or whatever. He asked me if I had a gun in the car. I said, it's none of your business. He said, hey, it's for my safety. And I said, yeah, and it's for my safety too. It's none of your business. Go get your supervisor. You know what I'm saying? I'm not answering any questions. Go get your supervisor, because you just racially profiled me. And if that was a black man, it probably would have ended differently. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I do see that we do have somewhat of a privilege, you know, but I've seen it, you know, in not so well for me as well. You know what I'm saying? Where I'm physically being manhandled by a man an officer of the law who's supposed to serve and protect me, and he's pulling me over for a minor issues or something like that. I'm going 5 above the speed limit or something like that, and he's snatching my phone out my hand and pulling my hair at the same time and throwing it on the floor. I mean, just over policing is something that we as a people, like, we deal with it, and we teach our kids or whatever to deal with it. And I think that that is something that has to stop. We need to stop being okay and complacent with, you know what I'm saying, these people being aggressive and make a change. You know, if that's defunding right. the police or abolishing the police or whatever it is, we don't need to live like this.
But just like you said, previously, we as women are not safe. So, you know, they talk about our black men, them fearing for their lives, or they're seeing our black men as being dangerous or their threat. But if you notice, there were a lot of women that I named too.
Absolutely.
So it's like, these are girls. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You are a police officer. You're a male police officer with a gun. I'm unarmed. I'm a girl. What I'm gonna do? As a man, you're physically stronger than me off top. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's like, you're killing us because we're black. You're killing us because you feel like our lives don't matter. We're not threats. We're not dangerous. The only thing we could be seen for as dangerous is with our mind, with our style, with the things that we have going on. We are dangerous in that aspect, but physically, we're not dangerous. Like, that kills me.
And
it's horrible.
It is horrible, especially with the story of Sandra Bland, because she's a sister from Chicago. I moved to that city. I didn't move to that city. I moved to that area, that suburb of Dallas. And you know what I'm saying? Just knowing that that's, you know, us Chicago women, we go toe to toe sometimes, you know, just seeing that. And I was in my transition to move to that area, and I instantly thought that could have been me. You know what I'm saying? That sister could have been me, because I don't have any, you know, challenging a man who feels like, oh, I'm better than you, I'm superior, and you don't know where you are or who you are. Don't talk to me like that. You know, like when I got pulled over in Dallas, I instantly started recording my son. He, you know, was 14 at the time, but to them, my 14-year-old was a man. You know what I'm saying? And it was horrible. The experience, I left that situation with, I want to say, probably $800-$900 worth of tickets for nothing.
Wow.
Driving while being black. Oh, wait, I did do something wrong. My stepson was not in a car seat, and he was 6 months, I believe, 6 months away from not needing a car seat. So he was big enough, but he wasn't old enough. And they gave me a ticket for that. So that was like,
and that's wrong though, because it has to be, it doesn't have to be both. Like, I feel like officers just take the law to such an extreme. Like, I feel like my biggest thing with people, even with my family, I try to remind them so often, like, what the law is, and don't ever get it twisted. Like, know your law, know your rights. You know, because, like, for me, I'm sorry, if you pull me over, I want to know why. You have to give me a reason why. You have to give me a reason why you're searching my car. Like, you have to give those certain reasons. And to be manhandled, like when you said you were manhandled by a man, one, he should have been fired, because he was supposed to call a lady officer to search you. So there isn't no disparities there. Like, there are so many different laws they did to his stuff. And because as some of us don't know our laws and our rights, he let them get away with it. Like, maybe fortunately for me, I haven't gotten pulled over, because I think I would just, for me, nah, we not having this conversation. Like, we about to pull over and I'm about to make a whole ASS of yourself. Because you're not about to do me, because I do know my rights, and I'm going to let you know yours, too. And I'm going to let you know which ones you're violating and which ones while I'm writing down your badge number and getting your supervisor's phone number.
Absolutely. So we just had our wonderful guest to join us. DeRay, how are you today?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for joining the show. You just came in on the tail end of a bunch of conversation about the unrest in our country. But I did give people a little bit of information about you. You're a young activist, a writer. You're an early supporter of Black Lives Matter. And, you know, something new that I found out about you today was you ran for mayor in 2016 and got 2.6% of the votes. That's impressive.
Yes, it's cool to be here. I can't wait to talk about the work. We have so much to do, and Lord knows there's a lot of work to go around. So happy to be here.
Oh, my God. Yes. And we're happy for you to be here. And my ladies, Lady V and Maya Marie, they are so excited to have you on the show. I've been talking about you for the longest. So we're just going to get right into it. You know what I'm saying? The first thing that I want to have you do is just introduce our audience members to you. I know you're a fellow podcaster. You are in so many different projects. Can you tell our audience members about you? Because I can't tell your story better than you can tell your story.
So I'm Dre. I'm an activist. I was one of the original protesters in Ferguson in 2014. We were in the street for 400 days. It was a long 400 days. Since then, we've been committed to the work of ending police violence. Like, that has been what we do all day and all night. So today's been a long day working on a set of solutions. I used to teach. I taught sixth grade math in East New York, Brooklyn, which was incredible. And then I opened up an after school center for middle grades, and I was the chief of human capital for the school system in Baltimore. So that was great. And I also worked in human capital and led all staffing for Minneapolis public schools at a point. So education was my career before I started to do most of my work in policing. So now I spend almost all my time in the police space trying to figure out, how do we transition away from policing as key to public safety, and how do we end police violence?
Thank you so much. So can you talk through some of the challenges that you experienced? Because 400 days, that's a long time. You know, that's definitely a long time. I know here in Wisconsin, our protesters are at the 107th or 105th day. So they've been marching consistently for 105 days. So can you talk to us about some of the challenges that you endured?
Yeah, so, you know, more importantly, I think the challenges that we face today is that when we look at the data, the police have killed the same number of people essentially every year. It's around 1,100 people. People think that it got better since 2014. It didn't. There's no year after 2014 that is better than 2014. And the police this year have actually killed more people today than they killed last year. So COVID, quarantine, protest, lockdown, like literally nothing changed it. Mm-hmm. So that is a challenge, right? So when I think about what we do, it's like we double down on the structures and systems. The police know that the worst case scenario that normally comes out of here, out of this process, out of the protest, is that an officer might get arrested or like somebody might get fired. Rarely does a system change, right? Rarely does anything change with regard to policies, practices, laws. Like, it just doesn't change, and they know it. So part of our work is to be really clear about, like, you know, there has to be accountability. Imagine if you had a job where it was impossible to get fired, that we have to press really hard and do those things. And if there's anything that I've seen that has been a challenge, I think that people confuse awareness with some sort of system change. Like, because we are talking about the problem differently, that doesn't mean that there's actually anything happening to the problem itself. And awareness alone won't be the thing that allows us to win.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree. I know that one of the things that we have, the issue that we have that we were talking about before you joined the show, was over policing in our communities. Have you, I'm pretty sure it's like common, you know, when it comes to us, you know, everybody's had an experience with over policing in a community. Can you talk through one of your experiences, one of your personal experiences with, being over policed by the people who are supposed to serve and protect us?
Yeah. So obviously since the protests a lot, but that, I feel like that just goes without saying. But my first time ever having a gun pulled at me by a police officer, I used to run an after school center, and we had kids. I had kids from like 3 to 8 p.m. But I went to work at 10 a.m. And I was going to school, but this day I was like going to the school really early, like 6 a.m. because one of our staff members had left out this kid, this document about a kid that was confidential on the cafeteria table. And I didn't realize she did it until the school was locked. So I had to get there like before everybody. So it's early in the morning. I'm driving through this affluent community of Baltimore City. And this police officer pulls me over, and I'm like chill. I'm wearing like hoop shorts, a hoodie. I'm like going to school. Like, this is real low key. And I'm not even speeding, but I see him about to get pulled over. So I see him coming. I just pull over, chill, whatever. He is like, I thought you were reaching for a gun. So he comes to my window, like, gun drawn, like,
oh, my God.
He is, like, cussing. It was just, like, it was a nightmare. He was, like, really intense. And I was so afraid of the principal at that point that I wasn't, I mean, the police officer stressed me out, but the principal hated me, like, absolutely didn't like me. So I'm, like, trying to get to school. I'm, like, if this man takes this long, like, what is going on? So I'm literally saying to the officer, I'm, like, it'll be okay. It'll be okay. Everything will be okay. And I de-escalate him. And, like, I remember calling one of my friends who was a prosecutor and being like, this just happened. This is so crazy. I want to complain. And she was like, Dorian, nothing's going to happen. You should just go on about your day. And I didn't even think anything of it. I was like, well, we're screwed. This is it. And now I'm like, that is like a real, that's crazy, right? Like, I'm one of a million people who have stories like this. And, like, it goes underreported. Nobody knows. Like, it's a nightmare.
Absolutely. I mean, for you to have to calm down the officer, that just seems so, it seems so backwards. It's like, you know, I never thought as a child that this is the type of environment that I would have to raise my children in. You know, like we were talking about it earlier about the conversations that we have as women with our children, how we have to tell them how to act in front of the police, what not to do. You know what I'm saying? And I think that it's just wrong. It's not something or whatever that I'm willing to do. Of course, I want my son to come home. Of course, I want my daughter to come home, but the system has to change. I'm not going to tell my child or teach my child to be complacent towards a system that doesn't respect, honor, serve, or protect them. You know, and that's why I decided to become an activist or a part of the movement, because it's broke. It needs to be fixed or it needs to be abolished. You know, something needs to change. Another thing that I've heard, you know, and I want to get back on the boycotting or the marches and the movement. You know, a lot of people talk about looting. You know, I want to know, what are your viewpoints when it comes to looting?
Yeah, I'm reminded that people wouldn't be on the street in the first place if the police hadn't killed anybody. So, you know, the only reason why people are out right now is because the police kill people. And if you really wanted people not to do any of this stuff people are so seemingly worried about, then we wouldn't have the problem in the first place. I also know that there's no social change that's ever happened in the United States that has not been precipitated by or preceded by property damage, that it is only when property is damaged in this country that people seem to understand that there's a challenge. And remember that this country has stolen more from Black people than any amount that could be looted today. So I think that conversation is often one about distracting us from the issue that caused people to be in the street in the first place.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then we're talking about property versus people. You know what I'm saying? We got to make sure that we're talking about the same thing. You're talking about a human life versus property, you know? And V, I hear you saying something. Go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, I get where people are coming from, but I also just feel like, and I think we've all discussed it before, where it's just like, so does your property equivalent to a human person's life? Like, you can rebuild, but if you kill a person, they can't be reborn. Like, this is just how this goes. Like, that makes sense to me. And for me, I just feel like if we gotta tear down some stuff to get your attention, okay. But then I'm also like the devil's advocate of, you know, when it comes to our community, I don't believe in destroying our community, because I'm just like, y'all, we live here and some of us actually do work in our community. So that's where you kind of get me on the fence. But I also just understand why they do it, because it's just like, this is what's going to make you feel some kind of way.
But do we own those communities? Do we own those communities, or are we renting those communities? I mean, I get what you're saying, but my thing is, do we own it? You know, are we burning down communities that we own, or are we burning down communities or whatever that someone else, you know, rents or something like that? So I'm kind of conflicted. And then, you know, I go back to, you know, hey, we're talking about property versus people. You know what I'm saying? Property versus people. And it just seems like, you know, it's different. You know, when you have the owner of, or not the owner, but the CEO from Target saying, hey, we have insurance, you know, we can get this stuff back, but we can't get a human life back, you know, so property versus people. And then, you know, that brings me into my topic, or into the situation that happened in Kenosha, where you had this vigilante. I'm going to call him an adult, because that's how they do our children when they're, you know, 15, 14. So this guy, Cal. Oh, yeah. He was an adult. He was definitely an adult. This guy, Cal, you know, Rittenhouse, who came to a scene to protect property. He came across state lines to protect property with an assault rifle that was deemed illegal in the state of Wisconsin. And he killed two people. And I think he shot three others. DeRay, did you hear about this situation? Well, actually, you did. I saw a clip from CNN that you were a part of, and you were talking about it. So can you give us some feedback or some insight on your viewpoints on that situation that happened in Kenosha?
Yeah, and I'll say about the property that, you know, we are always mindful about what people call violence, right? That we think about violence as harm against people, and property damage is exactly that, damage to property, and they're not the same, right? Now, when I think about the Kenosha, when I think about this vigilante, is that that's what we see this happen in history, right? Where, like, the moment that you start to change systems and structures to be more equitable, that white people just can't imagine a world where they don't have absolute power and they do things like this. I think that what's interesting about him is you see even the president defending it, right? You see the president's son say things like what Trump Jr. said. He had a bad day. You're like, I don't really know if killing somebody is like a bad day behavior, right? And that's what you see over and over again. It'll be interesting to see what the accountability for him looks like. But you think about Dylann Roof. It's like they took Dylann Roof to go get a hamburger after he killed 9 people in a church. And you and I both know that there are black people who have been shackled to the back of police cars for doing far less, right?
Absolutely. We can't even go to our cars without getting shot 7 times in the back, right? You know, so.
With the child guy, though, like, it was kind of crazy. It's always funny how, like you said earlier, with the black folks, they always want to bring out a whole list of laundry on us and what we even did, not what we've done. But with the child guy, they was like, oh, well, before he did that, he was out painting over graffiti. And this, I just felt some kind of way. Like, I was just like, I don't care how many walls he painted. He just killed 2 people, and
but they didn't show
him knowing he had illegal weapons and didn't do nothing. Like,
wait, they gave him water,
and y'all would have been okay.
They did do something. They gave him water and a high five.
Right.
He disobeyed the cops 7 times. It was on film. It was on video. He disobeyed them. He waved his hand, walked toward them with an assault rifle, and this man was able to go home,
go to sleep.
And then, you know, turn himself in to a juvenile center.
Right.
You know, not right. Real jail, kitty jail.
Kitty jail, so. Right, for killing 2 people. Like, but had that been my teenage son, y'all would have killed him as soon as y'all saw him walk in. Because
oh my God,
he would have been an American terrorist, period.
Absolutely.
And they would have beat your house down. They'd have killed all of y'all because they'd have tore your door down.
Right.
They'd have, you know, and it goes back to, this is why the conversation about looting and property damage is so interesting. Because there's this famous question about, like, how am I supposed to respond to murder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is my response to murder supposed to be? Am I supposed to call somebody? No. If somebody did this to somebody you love, there would only be rage, and you'd be completely justified in that. And we have lost so many people over and over that, like, you know, I always say the fact that we call for justice and not revenge is really a testament to black people.
I
feel like we have every right to be vengeful, right? We have every right to want to inflict this harm onto the people who harmed us, and I still say. We call for justice, right? We got a lot of work to do. I've never been more confident that we can do it, but I am worried, again, that people think that, like, a change in conversation means a change in outcome. When we look at the outcomes are not changing, right? People are talking about it more, but, like, part of it is how do we, like, push our elected people? How do we become the elected people? How do we change the rules so that we aren't here again?
Ashe. And I love, I love your disposition on that. That is so highly important, not only just changing the rules, but be in a position of power to make the rules, because that's what's important. You know, we don't need to just be a part of the voting process or changing, you know, the people, whatever in them. We need to be the people making the decisions, because we want, we want people like us to make decisions for us, not people who don't know what it is to live up in our shoes. And I'm just still distraught because, like, this young man, a Christian society, actually raised over $200,000 for his legal fees. I say prosecute his mother, too, because his mother actually dropped him off.
So annoyingly, like, she was an, like, pretty much you were a, an accessory to that crime because you knew what he was about to do. You knew what he had. You didn't tell anybody. Like, as a mom, I'm not about to drop my kid off, drive him across state lines. Like, you are, she totally needs to be charged. I'm down for my sons, and I'm going to ride for them. But I'm not about to ride that hard with you. I love you, but I'm not about to ride that hard.
And not only that, but then you have to also look at where did he get these thoughts? Where does he, you know, that come from his upbringing? So I'm sure when she dropped him off and he had a gun, she knew exactly what he was getting ready to do.
I feel like those are thoughts that are learned. Like, people feel like you're taught some things you are taught, but some things are just a learned behavior. Like, if his family are, sorry to say, a bunch of racists, you're not born a racist, you are learned to be a racist. That's just how I feel. I'm sorry.
No, don't
be sorry. You think about how confident you must be to do that, right? Like, imagine how confident you must be. You know, if any of us had done something like that, we'd have hid. There's no way we'd have gone home after killing somebody, right? We would be on the run somewhere. He's just like, you know what? I'm going to go to sleep. You're like, wow, what a world.
Right.
It's crazy. If you crazy.
Could just walk past the police with this big gun and just be like, okay with it.
But we forgetting the fact that they were protesting. The protesters were protesting because an unarmed black man was shot in the back walking away from the police 7 times. We're not talking about that, though. We just saying, oh, he was defending property that didn't belong to him, that he had nothing to do with. He wasn't even brought there to do it. They just formed the militia, said, hey, let's protect these homes. And I mean, it's just disgusting. It literally is disgusting.
Wait. So he basically said that he was defending property, and that's why he
yes, property that's crazy.
My thing with that, like you said,
he didn't have property.
This property is not even yours. So what property you defended? Somebody else's property?
All right.
I don't think it was so much you're wanting to defend property or protect property. You just wanted to get out there and shoot somebody. That's what you wanted to do.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. So we're going to talk about the comment from Jacob Blake's father. Jacob Blake's father made the mention of the two different justice systems. And he pretty much said, you know, this, the Kyle Rittenhouse situation and Jacob Blake's situation is an example of the two different justice systems. What do you think about that, DeRay?
Yeah, I think I honestly am like, this is deja vu, right? Like, how many times have we all heard this speech? Because it's true. It was true the first time. It's true this time. It's true with our cousins and our brothers and our sisters. You know, it's so true that we're like, okay, got it. Yes, right? The question becomes, like, what do we do about it? So there are clearly two justices. There's no way that you have racial disparities like we have in every facet of the criminal justice system. There's just no way that the disparities are so present without why is that? The ambulance is serious in New York tonight. Okay. There's no way you have the disparities look like this without it being intentional. national. I think that the question for us now is, like, can we build a coalition of people who can help us undo it? Because we know that when you fix it for Black people, you fix it for everybody, right? That we are targeted so disproportionately in such egregious ways that if the system works for Black women in hospitals so mothers don't die at childbirth, then, like, all women will benefit from that, right? Like, we know that to be true. So that's what I'm interested in. But, you know, it's hard. I don't even have anything new to tweet anymore. When the police do something, I'm like, I tweeted that in 2014. I don't have a new take on it. I don't have a new lens. It's the same. It was true then, you know?
Ashe. And at this point in the show, this time in the show, we go to our ancestor for an ancestral, not an ancestral profile. We did that earlier, but a historical viewpoint. Dr. Rogers, you've been sitting, you've been listening. We're going to come to you and see if you want to add insight on this situation, if you have any questions or concerns, or, you know what, let's just go to break first and then we'll come back to Dr. Rogers. Okay, we'll go to break. All right.
Amadou Diallo was shot 19 times. The police fired 41 shots combined. Mistaken identity, they had to admit it. When they went to trial, all four officers got acquitted. Ahmaud Arbery, his skin made him a target. Two racist white men shot him while he was jogging. Betty Jones was inside of her house the day after Christmas when shots rang out. A bullet traveled inside of her home and slaughtered her. No charges were filed against the officer. Cornelius Brown, cops chose to kill. They shot him 7 times. He was mentally ill. Dominic Fuller was murdered against stranger. They say he had a gun. All he had was a stapler. Eric Garner, he was a father, but now a martyr. Ain't deserved to be slaughtered. His last words, I can't breathe. Moment of silence. The officer who killed him didn't even get indicted. Emmett Till, 14 years old. They claim he flirted with a white woman. How cold. They took off his clothes, called him a nigger, lynched him and threw him in the Tallahassee River. Freddie Gray had a spinal cord severed, killed in a police van after arrested. 6 officers got charged. This is ridiculous. 2 years, 4 trials, no convictions. George Floyd, 3 officers nailed on him. He told him he couldn't breathe. They didn't care for him. The country rioting everywhere for him. Fuck those cops. I have no fear for him. Hector Morwan, he was unarmed. The cops shot him dead. He cried for his mom. India Kaga, Navy vet. The passenger in the vehicle was a suspect. A baby in the back seat. The cops started shooting. The officers were cleared of criminal wrongdoing. Jamal Clark, restraint wasn't enough. They shot him in his head while he was in handcuffs. Hal Coppin was mentally ill, but they say he had a gun. All he had was a hairbrush. The cops shot him, a king with the coroner. No charges were filed against the officer. Laquan McDonald was jaywalking. They shot him to the ground, murdered without a warning. Alleged that he pulled the knife and tried to rush him. The video proved they lied. How disgusting. Mike Brown, the suburbs of Ferguson. Allegedly a cop drove by, he had words with him. The officer shot him, he did nothing wrong. Why did he have to kill him? The man was unarmed. Nathaniel Pickett, rest heavenly. He was brutally murdered by a sheriff deputy. Oscar Grant, the world knows his name. He was traveling, the cops grabbed him off the train, placed him on his knees, laid him on his chest, then shot him in his back. May he peacefully rest. Philando Castile, traffic stop. He was legally strapped, he informed the cop. The officer got nervous, a murder was committed. Charged with manslaughter, but he got acquitted. Quintonio LeGrand called the cops 3 different times before he got shot. Allegedly, they say he charged at him with a bat. But since he made the call, it's hard to believe that. Rodney King, they beat him with billy clubs. They blame us, but the cops are really thugs. The verdict was not guilty. How shifty. That sparked the worst riot scene since the 60s. Sandra Bland, traffic stop. The racial profiling of stop. 3 days later, she was hanging in the cell. They ruled it a suicide. The truth shall prevail. Terrence Franklin was cornered in the basement. He tried to surrender, got executed by hatred. The U stands for the unknown who died by racism. Their faces weren't shown. Victor LaRussa, they thought he had one. But after they killed him, they never found the gun. Walter Scott, the world loves you. The cop said he feared for his life in the scuffle. The video proved he lied, revealed facts. He ran for his life, 8 shots in his back. Xavier Robey was riding his bike. Point blank range, they shot him and took his life. Yusuf Hawkins was shot down in 1989 by some racist clowns. Jamel Crawford was chased to his death. Rammed into a wall, he took his last breath. Zimmerman, I know you think you got away with it, but everyone has karma. Yours gonna be my favorite.
All right, well, thank you so much for that, Lady V. Did you want to do the lineup?
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank. You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank. With host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We're back. Thank you so much, DeRay, for staying on. We are going to do something different. We're going to talk about just some solutions. We like to take the second part of our show and talk about solutions and then also talk about some current events. DeRay, I know, are you a fan of basketball, like the NBA?
I was on mute. Would you say, was I a fan of what?
Oh, I'm sorry. I said, are you a fan of basketball, the NBA?
So I must admit, I just didn't grow up watching a lot of sports. I know a little bit about basketball. I followed them more closely since the walkout or since the boycott or the strike. Mm-hmm. But I haven't. I'm not like a regular watcher of the NBA. I'm interested to see what they will do about the police. You know, it's a big deal if they stopped playing for those couple days. I haven't seen as much come out about using their public platforms to do things around the police that'll be helpful. The Ravens actually did, which are not a basketball team, I know. They put out something that was helpful, but the Miami Heat put out a thing that's $1 million for police training that is potentially one of the most unhelpful things to do. So that made me nervous. But I'm interested to see what the rest of the NBA will do.
Okay. I know Lady V is a huge fan of Barack Obama. She calls him our forever president. she wanted to know just pretty much your thoughts on how do you feel about Obama being responsible for ending the boycott. You know, a couple of the players, I think it was LeBron James and a few others, actually called Obama for counsel. And Obama told them and encouraged them to continue to play. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that what is true is that there is not as much public consensus as there should be about what solutions will look like. I think it's also true that the solutions that will actually matter will take some sort of political risk. And there are a lot of people who are unwilling to engage in that sort of political risk-taking. So, like, fighting the police unions or dealing with the police saying that you hate them or think crime is okay, stuff like that. So when I think about what happened with the NBA players, I think that they felt convicted to do something and then looked up and wanted to find, like, a set of solutions, and I think they struggled to do that. I think that Obama probably took, like, the longer-term approach. It's like, you can play the rest of these games and still fight, that it wasn't, like, an either-or proposition. So that's my best guess. You know, we worked with the administration closely on issues of policing, and I do think that they thought Hillary was going to win, so they were really setting up the Hillary administration to do the work, to take some heavy lift, and then all of a sudden she loses, and, you know, the Obama administration did not do a lot around the police at all, though they were set up to do some stuff at the very end. So that's my best guess. I'm hoping that the NBA players will do something. Remember, when we look at the data, I mean, it's only a matter of time before there's, like, another video, right? Like, it is – the police are literally not stopping. So, you know, we'll see.
And that's so depressing. It's, like, literally depressing. They're not stopping. And I don't get it. You know, even when one of them spends a couple of years in jail, you know, you being held accountable, the spotlight being on you is – I mean, if something happens, we got Black Twitter, we got Black, you know, Facebook, you know, we're telling everybody, we're putting you on live. And I continue to encourage that. If you can't fight, you can't do anything or whatever, make sure you record something, you know, but I'm a fighter, so I'm not going to sit back and record. I might do something, but anyways. So, I mean, I feel when it comes to the NBA, and I just felt like they should have just stayed, you know, on boycott. Like, I feel like them going back, it kind of, like, to me, it kind of let me down a little bit. And I feel like they should have took a stance and continued to not play, because at the end of the day, you know, they're Black. You know, and if somebody doesn't recognize them as being a superhero or a NBA player or an athlete, you know, they get treated just like regular Black people. So, I mean, that's just my stance. But I'm one person. You know, Maya, what do you think about that? Oh, okay. V, go ahead.
Lady V, I'm like, uh-huh. I agree. Only for the fact that I just feel like when you are in positions where people idolize you, you can have a bigger impact. And I mean, I get it. They sign contracts. So they're, you know, they're legally, they are obligated to play, most of them, because of the contract that they sign. But if I'm not mistaken, in some of those contracts, it says that they only have to play so many games. Only in some of them, not all of them. Like, they have to play at least 30 out of 40 games or something like that. So I feel like, okay, well, I'm about to boycott a half. Like, if you boycott or five starters boycott half the games and then we boycott the others, we could probably make an impact here where it's just like, no, I'm not playing, dude. Like, you got to play these players. They're not going to play these same players the entire game because they're going to be exhausted. So at the end of the day, who's going to win? Nobody.
Absolutely.
Y'all losing money because we're not playing.
And
so
that's,
I just kind of felt like between the NBA, NFL, NHL, you know, all of these different sports arenas hit their pockets where it really hurts. It's so
absolutely
much money tied into, like, athletes. Hit their pockets,
yep,
where it hurts, because your endorsements ain't going to stop, because who wants to be known for Nike taking away your contract? Like, oh, you a racist now. Like, it's the same thing that happened with H&M. Y'all put a monkey on a Black boy and had to pull that whole line because of that fact.
Mm-hmm.
Hit them where they money hurts.
Absolutely. Hit them where it hurts in the pockets, D-Ray. That's something that I would say is a solution. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a part of it. I also think that, like, you know, imagine if you had a job where you knew it was impossible to get fired. I mean, that's the police. So if we're not honestly going to talk about something around accountability, then, like, it just won't matter. And, you know, I too was sad that they ended so soon, because I, you know, it was huge news and everybody was talking about it. And in ending it, I think, for some people, really deflated them, right? And made them feel like, you know, he never went. Like, if these people who are all rich, ostensibly, they're famous, they have access to anybody and everybody, like, that's sort of the way people experience celebrities. It's like, if they won't even take a stand, then, like, what can I do as a regular person? And again, I think that narrative doesn't help us. So that worries me. Like, that worries me.
But in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, we've had, I want to say, some of the major, you know, players like Giannis, you know, the Greek freak, the person that everybody loves on the Milwaukee Bucks, him and the starting lineup, they marched with the People's Movement. And I think that it was just immaculate for them to, you know, take time out of their day to be a part of the movement. And they didn't want any news, they didn't want any, you know what I'm saying, media coverage or anything like that. They did it just because they care about the cause. And then I think with, and Giannis actually started, you know, the boycott because he would not play game five, I think it was, in the playoffs. He refused to play after hearing about Jacob Blake. And then, you know, the Cal Rittenhouse, that man, I'm going to call him that man who killed those two people in, Kenosha. He refused to go up on, out on the court and play. You know, I felt so good in that moment because it felt like our voices were being heard. You know, it wasn't just, you know, somebody falsely, you know what I'm saying, trying to narrate a story about us. It was like a man who, you know, makes all this money, who lives in this community. He said, I'm taking a stand. I don't care about your money. I'm Black first, and I'm not going to shut up and dribble. You know, I'm not going to do it. And I felt liberated. So, I mean, I thought that was pretty dope.
Well, think about even Kaepernick when he took a knee and, mm-hmm. you know, they hated him for taking a
Absolutely.
Knee. And I felt like I would have took a knee too. Because in his uh-huh. mind, like, this flag is not our flag. This is not, you know, we ain't the land of the free and opportunity and everybody's one for all. This ain't us because my people are getting killed every day. Like,
Absolutely.
He lost a whole career over this because, and now it's like a whole boycott thing. And people are like, well, what about Kaepernick? Well, could they bring him back? Why would he want to come back? Why? I wouldn't, exactly. I'm sorry, I'm just him. I wouldn't want to come back and play for y'all. Skip y'all.
I still roll with Cap. Like, I actually posted something today on my Facebook page. It was a shared memory. Like, I stopped watching football and I was a football fan. I loved football. I went to the games. And after how I saw how they treated that man, like how they just disowned him, how they, you know, demified him or whatever, oh, you're unpatriotic. They labeled him. Like, I literally stopped watching football. What about you, DeRay? Are you an NFL fan? Are you a football fan?
So I consider Colin a friend, and Colin called me after he kneeled. I don't know much about football outside the NFL being racist. I think it is insulting that they just play in racism at the end of the court and or at the end of the field or at the end of the court. Take me home, everybody. Okay. At the end of the field. At the end of the court. And without acknowledging what they did to Colin. And, you know, Colin's young. Colin still works out every day. Colin's in great shape. Colin can play. And there's a difference between, like, being frustrated with football and being frustrated with the NFL. Colin still loves football, doesn't love the NFL, right?
Mm-hmm.
He still wants to play football, and, like, he should be able to play football. He also, it's only with Black and brown people that we never allow them to be professionals and citizens. So Colin had to choose between, was he going to be like a citizen who believed in justice or like a professional? White people, they get to be the president of the PTA and work at the bank, right? They, you know, we're never like making people choose between like, can they be citizens or can they be people who have careers? And it is really disappointing that continues to show up for Black people in this way.
I completely agree. So we want to talk about some solutions. Like, I know we talked about voting and we talked about putting people who look like us, who think like us, and who advocate for us in charge in these positions. What are some other solutions that we can talk to or put into action?
So the hard thing about the police is that almost all the things that don't matter are local, heavily local. They're super local. So the solutions really depend on the place. They are not as easy as like a one-size-fits-all. The buckets are big, though. So we think about three big buckets. One is reducing the power of the police. So that's like use of force policies. We did a campaign called You Can't Wait. It is a police union contract. That's a big one because the police unions have a lot of power and hoard power for the police. The second is shrinking the role of the police. So that's like moving the money away from policing. And the third is decarceration. So the reason why the police have such an expansive scope right now is that we have allowed the carceral state to be so big. We've built it up so much that the police have the license to be everywhere and anywhere whenever they want to be. And we can undo that. So that would be like decriminalizing things. That would be changing the threshold. That'd be ending technical violations for probation. Like, there are a host of things that you can do in the decarceration space. And combined, we believe that these three strategies, these big strategies, will get us to zero.
Okay. That's a lot. On my end, on a corporate level, because I work in corporate America, of course, I'm pushing the envelope. I'm making and holding my company accountable, making them have courageous conversations around race, around diversity, and then also forcing them to bring people in to make it a HR thing where everybody has to, you know, have these conversations. Because yeah, we can fix the police, but if we still have those people who think like that, who think that they're superior, we're still going to have a problem. I know another thing that I'm doing is also because Louis Farrakhan said it the best. He said the reason white supremacy exists is because we don't know the contributions of other people. You know, we don't know the contributions of Black people. It's erased in the history books. It's erased everywhere. In Texas, they're erasing slavery from the history books. And you have Black people supporting it. Not saying that slavery shouldn't be, you know, highlighted as the only thing that Black people contributed to the world or contributed to the United States, but it's a part of our history. Why erase something that we've endured? We need to know where we came from, know where we've been before slavery, pre-slavery, post-slavery, and slavery. We need it all. We need our history. So I'm an advocate for that as well, you know, teaching my children. Are there some other jewels that you can drop on our audience? I know you got to leave soon. And I do want to open up the mic to a few of our listeners because a few people may have questions for you.
No, I think you said everything about that one. You know, we definitely should, we have to figure out how to, it's sad that there are a lot of schools still where all of the people that young people read are white, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not actually American history. That we should do a better job of forcing the curriculums to be better, to be stronger, to be more inclusive, right? Because that's actually what the truth is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and everything else is, you said it.
Thank you. Thank you. And we're pushing the DEI initiative, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And my objective with my corporate company, and I think that everybody should get on board with, you know, holding their people accountable, you know, is to promote, you know, African Americans. Not only that, but give them the skills, give them the training that they say that they don't have as being a reason why they're passed up for promotions. You know, one of the things that I'm doing with the employee resource group that I just started is I'm sponsoring two African American people to go through the Six Sigma program. So I mean, that's what I'm doing as one person, but I think that we all can do something. You know, if we make an alliance and we say, hey, this is what we want to see within our organization, this is what we want to do, and hold our companies accountable. But I'm going to open up the mic to this brother in, it looks like, New Jersey. Last four digits of your number is 0265, brother. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I'm going to pass, though.
Oh, you just want to listen? You don't want to talk? You don't have a question or a comment for our guest?
No.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you so much for listening. We have a few other guests on the line. I see somebody calling from the 414 area code in Milwaukee. And it looks like a brother, or I'm sorry, not a brother or a sister. I don't know who you are, but last four digits, 7516. 7516, you are live and on the air. Do you have any questions or comments for Mr. DeRay? Hello?
Hi, yes, I'm here.
Oh, hi, sister. How are you?
Oh. I'm doing good. I have a question. I just wanted to make a comment. I agree with something. I just actually tuned in not too long ago. Okay. But one thing that I will suggest, like something to add to the solution, I'm not sure if you guys mentioned it already, but, you know, us as a Black community, policing ourselves, building on our community, getting back to our roots with serving out our purpose. you know, everyone building on their crafts and developing themselves within the community and cultivating our culture.
Ashe, that's highly important, especially for our people, building on character. DeRay, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that's right. The only thing I'd say, right, is that we have always done that stuff. Like, the reason why our communities don't have resources is not because we didn't care enough. It's not because we didn't work hard. We actually have all of these things despite the system working against us, right? Mm-hmm. So as much as I believe in personal responsibility, I'm mindful that it's not the absence of personal responsibility that got us here. It was racism.
Mm-hmm. Ashe, I completely agree. It's a two, and this beast is so big. It's like so many people, so many people have so many different issues or problems that they can identify within our community. We have to tackle, you know, fighting each other, fighting the system, and then fighting, we're in a constant battle. We're constantly fighting, you know, and in the Black Reality Think Tank and, our platforms, After Seven, our mission is to basically get us back to where we are, you know, getting back to our roots, where we're building character and we're having healthy conversations and healthy relationships in the Black community. And that's why we have these conversations. So DeRay, I know you have to leave pretty soon, and I thank you so much for being a part of this panel and part of this discussion. Do you have any final remarks or anything that you want to leave us with? And tell us about your book. You didn't talk about your book.
Oh, the book is called The Other Side of Freedom, The Case for Hope. So would love for people to check it out. The only thing I'd add is that, you know, we think that we can win in this lifetime, right? Like, we believe that. If this is not like a 500-year fight, like I said, like, this is something we can do. And Malcolm X has this great line where he says, we are not outnumbered, we are outorganized. And I think that's true. Like, the numbers are on our side. Remember that Black people are the global majority. And, like, this country will be majority people of color soon, which is why Trump is working so hard to try and maintain power. But, like, we can totally do this. We just have to organize, and we are not there yet to have the capacity to do it. So I'm excited. I think we can do it. Let's go.
All right. Are you running for any offices in the future or anything like that? Anything?
Oh, not right now. I'm trying to beat the police. Beat the police. I'm beating the police, and then we'll see.
Just beat the police. Maya, you've been extremely quiet today. Do you have anything for DeRay before he leaves us, sis?
No, I think he said it all. I ain't been quiet, girl. I've been listening to the jewels he's been dropping. I've been listening to the comments and the questions. That's all.
Okay, my bad. Okay, Lady V, I know you have something to say.
Really? I don't have much to say. I appreciate him coming on the show, though. I love talking to somebody who feels the same way I do about certain things, just for the fact of when it comes to the police, I'm all about defunding them. And I feel like we need to clarify what defunding is, because most people feel like it means to just abolish them. And it's not really, that's not what we're saying. We're just saying, like, some of their funds just need to be taken away for some of the little stupid stuff that they do.
Reallocate.
They need a lot of let's reallocate their funds. You know, they need a lot more training, a lot more certifications, their tests, their, you know, postpartum or their PTSD tests. All of that stuff needs to be redone, reassessed, all of that. Like, that's how I feel. So I appreciate you coming on this show. I really do.
Absolutely.
And then stop sending them out for mental health issues, you know, because it doesn't end well on if that person is a person of color. DeRay, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, so the only thing I'd say, and I'll push a little bit on the training piece, is that the best way that I think about what a solution is versus what a solution isn't is to swap out the police for teachers. So if if any of you have kids, or if you have kids that you love in your life, like, think of that child. Mm-hmm. And if a teacher was beating your child during the school day, and you went up to the school and talked to the principal, and the principal said, you came in like, we got to do something to that teacher. This is unacceptable, which is what you say if a teacher is beating your child. If the principal said to you, you know what we're going to do? We're going to send that teacher to training. You would be like, that is insufficient, right?
Fire
that would
teacher.
Be an unacceptable. At the least, it is fire them. But like, it'd be unacceptable, for the principal to be like, you know what? We're going to send them to training. So that's how we feel about the police, right? Training might be interesting, but it doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't. It's not. It's an unacceptable response to the problem. Mm-hmm. Same thing about body cameras. If somebody was beating your child, and the principal was like, you know what? I'm going to put cameras in the classroom. You would be like, what is that going to do? What's that, right?
Okay.
That's how we feel about body cameras. Might be interesting. It clearly won't stop the problem, right? Mm-hmm. So I say, like, I always use that as my test.
And I've heard that 50% of a city's budget actually goes to the police. You know, and working in the field that I work in, I know that a lot of them use those funds for military equipment and, you know, stuff that they just don't need it for. When we can be reallocating those funds to the schools that actually need new equipment, you know, 53206 area code, the worst area code in the country is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Those kids, those area codes, those schools need new equipment, new books. You know, that's what we should be fighting for, not for the police to continue to police us. You know, I completely agree. Any last words, DeRay? I know we're keeping you a little bit longer. Can you tell us about what's new for you, or what's to come? Anything that we should be looking out for or on the lookout for? And how can our listeners find you if they want to follow you on Facebook or social media? Can you leave us with your info?
Yep. On Twitter, it's just DeRay, DeRay. And then on Instagram, it's I am DeRay. So check that out. And that's it. It's an honor to be here. If you want to do work together, please hit me up on something, and I will see you soon.
All right. I'll see you soon. Thank you, brother, so much for joining our show. It was an honor to have you. We're going to continue on with this conversation. And I'm going to just, you know, kick it over to Maya. Like, Maya, anything to add, sister? Because I've never heard you this quiet.
Oh, stop it. I'm not quiet. I was just giving our guest the floor to enlighten us on the things that he's doing, you know, to help this crisis that we're in. So, you know, that was all. I just want to let him have the floor to kind of share with some of those ideas and things that he's doing, because they're awesome. And, you know, just like B said, you know, I appreciate being with.
All right. Ashe. And Lady V.
Oh, I don't have anything else to say to DeRay. He's free to leave. We're not going to keep him hostage any longer.
I know. I know, DeRay. And your assistant told me that you have some stuff to do. So I know. Thank you so much for being a part of our show. We truly do appreciate everything that you did, and for you taking the time out and then dropping the jewels on our audience members, because it's so desperately needed. And we're going to keep on with these conversations about solutions and trying to, you know, be out there. And one thing that we didn't mention is there is a need for us to support the young people that are out there on the front line. You know, those people who are marching. If you guys are not just, you know, if you don't have the time or the energy, if you can't physically find yourself out there on the front line with them, you definitely can contribute by giving money. You definitely can contribute by giving water. There's so many things that we can do, you know, as a community, and we need a united front. We need to make sure that we are showing support for these people who are risking their lives. You know, I absolutely support these young people and the efforts that they're making, and they're doing a lot. they're out there, they're doing the work, and they're making changes. And to down their work, because I've heard so many people just talk down on the people who are out there on the front line saying, oh, you know, hey, don't call me to march, call me to do this and call me to do that. Well, yeah, that's needed too, but you also need to support the people who are actually doing the work. You know, when I think of them, I think of, you know, the Montgomery bus boycott, you know, which was one of, you know, people don't really paint that story or tell that story for what it truly was. Rosa Parks didn't just get up one day and say, I'm just going to sit on a bus because I'm tired. That was something that was planned out, that was strategically, you know what I'm saying, done. And I think that they did that and they made such an impact on the economy in Montgomery, Alabama, that they forced them to do what they want them to do. Now, of course, we lost because integration or whatever did, was the result of, you know, a lot of black businesses being disposed, like the black bus systems and the black taxi cabs, you know what I'm saying, owned taxi cabs. Now that was lost, but I think that from that story, I want to paint the picture of us being united, you know, not, you know, what way we're going to go, but just being united. You know, we got to make a decision. We got to talk to one another. We got to, you know what I'm saying, come up and formulate some opinions on where we want to go and how we want to move. And Lady V, I know you got something to say, girl. Go ahead, girl.
I always got something to say, I feel like. But I do agree with the whole system. Like, that'll be something that will be amazing to bring back. Black taxi cabs, black buses, us helping one another, us making our community stronger again. When we have Hmong, Chinese, Asian, Italian, we have all these different races that actually commute each other. Like they help one another. You have family members that take care of other kids so that one can work. Why can't we do that for each other? Like, we don't have to feel like we hating against each other and fighting against each other, because we're not. We need to stop competing against each other and help one another and build our community and make it more, or make it stronger, so then we don't have to depend on nobody else. Like, if your friend need a ride, give your friend a ride. If it's a, you know, carpool, make it a whole system. Before we know it, the bus system's okay, ain't nobody riding the bus. I mean, I'm sorry, that's, you know, that's people's jobs, but do we really need the buses if we helping each other? We got to hit them where their pockets, like, we got to hit them in their pockets, period.
Absolutely.
Just so we can get some restitution. We got to make it our own. And like you were saying earlier, if we want to get people to be out there, if you're not out there on the front line, even encouraging words, I'm going to be honest, even encouraging words, because it gets so depressing to be out here and you're feeling like you're doing this stuff and it's not helping. But to have somebody give you some encouraging words to say, keep going, you got this, I'm rooting for you, that could be a deal breaker for some of those that are on the front line.
And I think my issue is that we get so, like, fixated on the process. It's not about the process, it's about the end result. We can try so many different ways in doing something. If my way don't work, we can try your way next time. You know, we have to get to a point where we're working together. And I think that that's where we lack. You know, we're so busy trying to pinpoint and talk about each other's differences. We really need to get together or whatever, young, old, you know what I'm saying? And just, you know, support one another, because that's what's most important. We need to continue to support one another. We need to continue to, you know, especially support these people on the front line. You know, I can't stress that enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, just seeing the different groups that are on the front line, seeing the different missions and stuff like that, I admire them so much. I've walked with a lot of them, and I just appreciate, you know what I'm saying, people taking time out their day to take a stand and to fight for the cause, you know, regardless on what that cause is, because of course I'm out there for my son. I'm out there for people who look like my son. I'm out there for myself. I'm out there so there doesn't have to be another, Laquan McDonald or, you know, a Tamir Rice. I'm out there to prevent the future, you know what I'm saying, young brothers and sisters or whatever, from being assaulted, brutalized by the police, you know? Or just white supremacy. That's my reason for being out there. You know, I just feel like there's such a need to stop complaining about the situation and take action, get organized. I can't stress that enough. You know, Malcolm X said it, DeRay said it, I said it. You know what I'm saying? We're all saying it. Get organized, people. Get organized. Now, Maya, anything, any comments off that? What do you think about getting organized, sister?
To get organized. I also, one thing I do also think we need to do is that, because all cops are bad, of course, you know, we're talking about cops. We are talking about the bad cops who are killing us every day, but all cops are not bad. And I think part of it is that we need to have more cops that look like us in our community. A lot of times we've got cops that live out in Waukesha or Mequonico, you know, and they're driving into Milwaukee to police our community. Whereas I think that if we had more cops who look like us, who understand us, it would be a better situation, because they are here to protect and serve. We do want them, you know, to police our community so that it's not chaos, but we need to have cops that look like us, that understand us in our community.
So I'm a radical sometimes or whatever. What about just abolishing the police? So are we animals? Do we need people to police us? What about investing those resources into you know, building up our community so there is no need for a policing of our community? You know, if there's jobs, there's no crime.
I think we do need police though. Because everybody, even if there are jobs, there are some people who don't want to work. You know, there are some people who don't want to work. They don't want 9 to 5. You know what I mean? They want to. There are some people who just, that's who they are. They live a life of crime, and that's who they are. So I think we do need police to protect and serve us. I think they are needed. It's just that when they over-police or they take advantage of the power that they've been given, that's where the problem comes in.
Ashe. So I have a sister on here that's going to comment, or, you know, this sister is on the front line, revolution ready. Becca, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How you doing, ladies? Hey, Maya.
Hey.
So,
I'm
going to join
this conversation. I have a few questions. So,
okay.
What is it that you need from the police? I would say, the first thing I would say, I hear is safety. So one thing that we need from the police is safety, in which, in most cases, they are not providing. So what does safety look like outside of a man or a woman with a badge and a gun and a taser and pepper spray? In a billy club, in a uniform. Are there, like, so I had to come to this point too where I was like, I don't know a world that exists without plain catchers, because that's where the police originated from. The foundation of the police were to be slave catchers, and the sheriffs were to catch slaves that were born from county to county, just like they do now.
Drop them jewels, sis.
And imagine what, this is a great, great opportunity for this country, black people in this country at large, because it's like, we don't know what this world, this system looks like without slave catchers, because we've never been in a system without slave catchers. And if what we're asking for is someone who can tame chaos and someone who can provide safety, what other creative options can we come up with? Because obviously the ones that we have are not doing their job, and the ones who don't do, the ones who are doing their job are just as guilty as the ones who are doing their job. Because you knew on this force for 10, 15 years that this person was committing crime, and you didn't turn them in. And even if you wanted to turn them in, you couldn't turn them in, because there's a union that's protecting them and you. So if the good ones are in there with the bad ones, and the bad ones are still not being held accountable, how good are the good ones? So what would life look like without having slave catchers as protection?
That's a good question.
Man, this is the time to blow the top off and get creative. Like, how can, okay, because let's keep it funky. Like, we know we, in the hood, we got people who, poverty is crime. Poverty is violence. You know what I mean? So if we want to end the violence in our neighborhoods, the poverty got to end. A lot of people don't work. Why? Because a lot of people are depressed. And they don't even know that they're depressed because they might get the mental health that they need. Because they don't even know to go get mental health. So if we want to stop crime in a community, the first thing in our community, I would say that we have to hit the economic system that we have in our community. We need more money coming in our community and staying in our community. That's one. Two, for safety, we need to find more creative ways to prevent crime before it happens. This could be the issue of impoverishment. Then we need to find a way to protect ourselves.
Ashe. I completely agree. You know, I think that in the, was it the 70s when the Black Panthers were active, they weren't policing our communities. We had to police our own communities. So you had the Black Panther parties, you know what I'm saying, setting up block clubs and protecting the people. You had them or whatever, educating the children. You also had them feeding the kids because they had the Saturday breakfast program that actually ended up being women, infants, and children, which is called WIC now. You know what I'm saying? They took that from the Black Panthers, and they're still using it today. I mean, you have all these systems that's put in place. We can do it. You know, I think that we're just so accustomed to, hey, this is going to happen. This is bad. This bad stuff. We're traumatized, you know, and we're brainwashed to think that we need this when in actuality we don't. We are a peaceful people. We are definitely peaceful. Yes, crime happens. Crime happens everywhere. But every country doesn't have a police system that's set up like ours. You know, there are people who have police officers who don't carry guns. You know, there has to be some type of different, there has to be a different way of doing things. We can't continue to do the things that we've done for so many centuries and have no type of improvement. None whatsoever. And Lady V, I know you got something to say because you've been unmuting your mic and muting your mic. Go on here, girl.
My background was getting loud for a minute there. I had to, but I do agree certainly with everything because it's just the fact of, you know, having our own police system. That sounds great. It would be a great thing to do. Even, but also, the young lady, I was hearing her say, with the economic and mental health issues. Like, we talked about mental health in the Black community a couple shows ago. A lot of our Black people don't believe in going to somebody and getting mental health, you know, getting that help that they actually truly do need, you know, because we were taught for so long, you know, to keep our problems to ourselves and, you know, to hold it all in. So we have to start even reprogramming ourselves first so we can even feel that way. Even, you know, some of our young women are programmed and taught to get on the system. So we have to start teaching our kids and, you know, reprogramming ourselves that we need to get, you know, mental help. We need to not work or want to be on a system, you know, just get out here, get these jobs that are out here. But it is hard to get some of these jobs only because the color of our skin, whatever our name is, they look at our name and they throw our resume out because our name is different. You know, it's more unique than what they're used to. So we just have to be more careful about certain things, but we got to show them that we want it. We can do it better. And I tell my son all the time that you are a Black young man. You are going to grow up. And the one thing that the world can't take from you is what you know. So I stress education in my kids. You know, I'm not saying he has to, or him or her have to go to college afterwards, but it's all about what you know. If you know more than your counterpart, you are an asset, but you're also a threat because you know so much. So we gotta even do that too.
I think that, you know, when we talk about jobs, you know, I feel like we're talking about like living on a system and living for the system. We want to break the system and we want to create our own jobs. You know what I'm saying? We want to build our own legacies and build our own neighborhoods. You know, we got to teach right. our kids or whatever trades. We got to do so many different things and have our hands in so many different pots. We got to be multifaceted. Yes. You know, so let's not, like with my son, oh man, my son, you know, we've had these conversations and, you know, we've had conversations of not just having a job, but having a trade. You know what I'm saying? Having something that's going to make you marketable, you know, whether it doesn't matter where you go, you can go anywhere or whatever and you can make money and you don't have to make money working for someone. You can work for yourself to make money. And I think that that's the mindset that we need to have as a people. We need to stop expecting people to give us something, give us jobs, right. give this and create our own, you know, because that's the mentality that's going to continue to keep us in this situation. We got to emancipate ourselves from mental slavery because it exists. Mm-hmm. You know, we are all oh, yeah. sick. Mm-hmm. And we can also, with piggybacking off of what you said, people don't know that they sick. If 50% of a budget goes to the police and they're believe me, I'm telling you, they're wasting that money. 50% of that budget goes there. We can mandate some type of mental health check. We can do things. We can be creative. We don't have to, you know what I'm saying, think that, oh, people aren't going to get help. We can make sure that people get help. You know, if we know people or whatever, we can make it happen. We just have to be creative and we have to get organized. I keep hearing that. Just get organized. We don't know what the process is and we don't know how we're going to fix it, but we got to try multiple things because we're fighting each other. We're fighting the system and it's just an ongoing fighting. I'm tired. I'm tired right. of fighting, you know, but I'm going to keep and on fighting.
I
mean,
I feel like that's how our elders feel like. That's why our elders say the things that they say, like you guys are fighting this fight that we've been fighting. It's not going to change because I feel like some of them just feel like I'm tired of fighting this same fight. Like it's not going to change because we've been fighting for so long. And I don't always think that it's the same fight. I feel like it changes a little bit, but then technically it is the same fight. We're fighting for rights. We're fighting to be equal.
I don't think that this fight is that.
A black justice system Mm-mm. and a white justice system. Like, we want the same justice system. If you create one, Mm-mm. it should be one entire justice system, not two different ones.
Absolutely. I think we're fighting to break the system and we're not fighting for equality. We're fighting for equity. You know what I'm saying? It's a difference. Everybody can't benefit from the same support systems. We're asking for them to give, not necessarily give more. We're trying to pour into more where the resources are needed, number one. And then when we're talking about we're fighting the same fight, this is a different fight. I've seen people on the front line. I've seen people in DC, how they interact with the police is totally different than how we interact. And I think change is coming and change is coming now. I don't see this happening or whatever in 20, 30 years. And I'm going to tell you this, I'm not going to be on the front line 40 years from now with my grandkids or my daughter. Like it's ending now. And I think that we need the support of the people. The people need to support one another. We got to continue to support one another because if we want it to change, we make it change. You know, people are at population zero. They're finding ways to contain us, to keep us down. You know, like at the end of the day, they know change is coming and it's happening. They have no choice. Becca, did you have anything to add to that, sis?
Yeah. So I just want to piggyback off of Lady B?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. what Lady B is saying and what you're saying, the difference between the older generation and our generation is a different mindset and a different goal because a lot of them bought into the American dream. So while they believe in you need to go work a 9-to-5,
our generation believes in, we don't want a job fair. We want an entrepreneurship fair. We want you to give to our businesses. And we want to grow our own business and be our own boss. And the reason why they gave into that dream, that American dream where you work the 9-to-5, you get married, you have a white picket fence. And that's something that white supremacy built as a carrot to dangle in front of them. So while we are fighting for justice and fighting against injustice, we're not fighting the same fight. The fight that they fought was they wanted to be a part. They wanted to be included. Inclusion in America. Our fight is more of, no, we want America to take down this curtain, this wall, this illusion that they portray for us and tell us that, okay, if you just go get this education, then you'll be successful, which is a lie, because knowledge that's not applied is still useless. It's young boys in the hood who, if they had the right mentor right now, they have enough knowledge from Google and YouTube to build a business and be successful. It's just that they don't have the focus most of the time, or they don't have somebody pushing them a lot of the time. Working with the youth, I see that if you lead them in the right direction, they'll run full speed and they can be successful. I have a young lady who I mentor her from freshman year in high school. She's a senior now in college. And as she is finishing college, she has already taken off in her business. She has an online business. She's traveling around the United States selling products. Because she realized that this American dream is a lie. It's a facade. Ain't no American dream. And if she's going to have anything in this lifetime, she's going to have to apply herself and use the God-given gifts and talents that she has and the ability. And she has to apply all the knowledge that she learned from freshman year to now to be who she is today. They tell us, oh, just go get married. Just go to school, you'll be okay. Own a house. Even if you own a house, you're still trapped in a mortgage. That's still enslavement. You're not outright buying a house. Even if you go get a nice car, you're still trapped in enslavement if you have to pay a car note for the car. But these are the things that we are being taught in America, that this is the standard for success. Their success is a lie. We don't need job fairs. We don't need the government daddy. We need our own businesses. We need a Black Wall Street. It's the reason why they destroyed Black Wall Street. It's because we were independently, we were without them creating wealth. That would have created generational wealth for all of us. And if we take that same model, and we have enough courage to move forward, regardless of if they give us anything or not, then we can be successful. If we continue to rely on the government as our God, we're always going to be let down. Even when it does come to their education system. I'm not saying don't go to college. There's some things that some trades and some jobs and some careers where you need to go to college. I'm going to keep it real. But for the most part, the African-American, even the college dropout, the high school dropout, they can educate themselves with the tools that has been given to us. It ain't nothing you can't look up on YouTube and learn. Mm-hmm. It's just investing in ourselves. We have to invest in us. We have to invest in these young people that they can be successful if they use their gift and their talent. It's going to make room for them. I remember When I a few years ago, after I had my daughter and I was getting weak and all of that, I had a conversation with God. God was like, either I'm going to be your daddy or the government going to be your daddy. You need to choose this day. And I chose God. Didn't get no stamps. I never collected no W-2. But, you know, it was getting rough. I was on my way to. That's when he stopped me. And he said, just trust me. And if you just trust me, I'll take you to the next place and next level in your life. So coming out of that mental bondage is key. They can't track you mentally, but if you don't take all that you know and apply it, wisdom and understanding is the principal thing.
Ashe, thank you so much for, you know, dropping all those jewels on us. Maya, we got like 30 seconds left. Do you have any last remarks for our audience or anything like that?
No, just thank you for listening. Thank you for having this conversation with us. You know, listening, those of our audience who have been listening, those who have commented, thank you so much, Becca, for sharing with us. And any of our other listeners and callers who have called in, we just want to thank you for listening and make sure that you continue to support us.
Ashe, thank you so much. And then we just want you guys to leave on a high note. We talked about solutions at the end of the day. We talked about property does not amount to people. Thank you, and we'll see you guys next week.
But I know